Do you want to know what's really fun about being a woman?
This is starting to sound like a Shania Twain song.
Man, I feel like I'm in perimenopause. Ugh, the brain fog, the mood swings, the night sweats, the unpredictable cycles. Many women enter perimenopause and they don't even realize what's happening to their body, and it's directly impacting how they're making major life decisions.
You get divorce strategy on this podcast, but when it comes to strategy for what's happening inside your body, our friends at Natural Cycles are here to help. Their new app mode, NC Perimenopause, within the Natural Cycles app interprets those hormonal shifts with data and science.
So I'm currently using the app and the intel is fascinating. It doesn't just track symptoms. It helps me see patterns and it helps me connect the dots between my hormones, my symptoms, and my lifestyle. It even estimates what stage of perimenopause I'm in. I love that it helps me better understand what's going on with my body and why I have days where it's more difficult to make decisions than others. And that clarity really matters. You can even download a personalized report that you can bring to your doctor, which makes those appointments way more productive.
Natural Cycles is a female-founded digital health company that analyzes biomarker data to help users better understand their cycles. NC Perimenopause is for anyone experiencing or anyone who thinks they may be experiencing perimenopause, from the first hormone-related changes to your cycle or symptoms all the way until menopause, when your periods stop. Learn more and give it a shot right alongside Andrea.
Yes, let's do this thing together. You are not alone in your divorce or this transition. There are tools to help you make sense of what your body is doing. Visit naturalcycles.com and use code DIVORCE. Or tap the link in the show notes to learn more about how you can save on a subscription.
The How Not to Suck a Divorce podcast cannot be copied or rebroadcast without consent. This podcast does not contain legal advice. The information contained herein and provided on the podcast and the resources available are not intended and shall not be construed as legal advice. And with that, enjoy the show.
Ah, summer, vacation vibes, sunshine, summer camp. What could possibly put a damper on your life?
Co-parenting drama. Unless you're proactive and wildly smart, which, I mean, you listen to this show, so duh. All the smarties are using Our Family Wizard, the judge-approved and attorney-recommended co-parenting app.
Whether you're high conflict or you just want to stay organized, Our Family Wizard is our official co-parenting app recommendation for this show.
And guess what? We are the only ones who can offer you a discount. That's right. Go to ourfamilywizard.com/notsuck20 and save 20%. The process of getting divorced might suck, but you don't have to suck at getting divorced.
You have found the only divorce podcast that's hosted by a family law attorney and a recovering comedian. Get ready for action steps, empathy, and a lot of laughs.
This is How Not to Suck at Divorce. You spoke, we listened.
Our number one product, the Divorce Crash Course, is now available as a private podcast.
So for $150, you'll have access to listen to the DCC just like you're listening to this episode right now. You can watch the DCC and you'll get the printable workbook.
More importantly, you'll get insider information to save up to thousands of dollars on your divorce.
The Divorce Crash Course, expert divorce guidance for a fraction of the price. Check out the link in our show notes or visit thedivorcecrashcourse.com.
Okay, so I learned something about myself this week, which is kind of unique because you would think at this age I would stop learning about myself, but here I am.
Wait, I like that you think that there's a point where you stop learning about yourself.
I do.
I'm pretty sure that every self-help book or every TV show out there that focuses on, like, let's grow at every age would listen to this right now and be like,
wait, what? Yeah, I just thought at some point you're mature enough to know, like, this is what I like and this is what I don't like, you know? So anyway, this is ridiculous, but we're recording on a holiday week. So when we're recording, it's a Tuesday, right? And the holiday's at the end of the week. No big deal. But what I realized is that holiday weeks, most people travel, they do fun things, work really slows down. And for most normal human, it would be like, yes, that is awesome. It's quiet at work. There's nothing going on, all this stuff. What I'm realizing is when it's quiet at work, I'm like, I'm not good. I'm not happy about it because I feel like when I'm not in my routine and things aren't crazy, I don't know what to do with myself. It's like I feel like such a loser. Like I'm kind of walking around the house trying to figure out what to do, wondering why my emails aren't going off. And I'm like, is this what's going to happen to me when at some point I want to retire? I'm going to have nothing to do and feel like a loser? I don't know.
Probably. I think I'm wired the same way. My dad is like the worst at this. I don't think my dad will ever be able to retire because he's still, I mean, the man is like, I don't even know how old he is, but he still works full time. And he just, I mean, but I feel the same way. When things like slow down and most people are like, oh my God, this is amazing. It's so quiet. I can just relax. I kind of get a little anxious too.
Yeah.
Like, wait, what's, this doesn't feel right. Like I'm like, come on, let's keep going. Let's find something else that's going on. So interesting. Very interesting. I think that, you know, we're learning new things about ourselves every day now, Morgan, aren't we?
And we are. Likening it to divorce, if your schedule, because when you're in a divorce, there's really kind of nothing that is uniform. Everything you've kind of done in life is kind of thrown out the window. So you're probably feeling like I am, like, oh my God, what do I do? What do I do with myself? Because every day is something different.
Mm-hmm. And the woman whom we're chatting with today actually has firsthand experience working with the queen of all of these like self-help topics. And actually the first person I'm pretty sure in this country to host a top ranking national TV show about talking about these things and how we evolve. And what's so funny about this is we're about to hear from our guest whose entire story is about evolution. So I think we need to get into this because this episode is really going to give you a different perspective on how to view your marriage and your divorce. So let's go. So I got to tell you, Morgan, when I was chatting with today's guest prior to just now, at one point in our conversation, she said to me, you know, I should have gotten divorced before I got married.
Wow. I don't even know how to really respond to that statement because I don't know if those are like fighting words, if that's a sadness, or if it's just like off the cuff. So I'm looking forward to understanding exactly what's going on here.
There, believe me, there's a lot to unpack with that statement. So I'm going to jump right in on this one. I am really excited for this guest because she's going to explain everything that she meant. Oh. Our guest today is Heather McGinley. She is an Emmy Award-winning author, podcaster, and founder of The Happily Never After, which takes a look at how life's endings can actually lead to new beginnings. So Heather, welcome to How Not to Suck at Divorce.
Thank you so much for having me.
So Heather, I have to know, tell us what you mean when you say that you should have gotten divorced before you got married.
I know it sounds like a directly conflicting statement, but it really hits at the heart of how I feel about this whole process. I've been divorced for I left my marriage 5 years ago. Divorce was finalized maybe three-ish years ago. And I have just learned so much through this process. I would say I have learned more about myself, about love, about relationships, about marriage and commitment in the last few years than I did in all of the years prior. I think divorce, you know, there's a saying, getting divorced is terrible, being divorced is great. And I really do believe in that. That process is so hard, but it's almost like it breaks you down and you learn so much and you come back together in a new and better way, hopefully. Doesn't happen for everyone, but for most people that I have talked to, they feel this way as well. I know for me, you know, the big thing that stands out to me, I was never in a healthy relationship before. Andrea, I think we talked about this a little bit, you know, when we were just hanging out, talking a little bit before this recording. I had never been in a healthy relationship before, ever in my life. And I realized that I did that all the way up into my upper 30s because I didn't want to work on myself. Like if I chose, you know, I date men and I get in relationships with men. If I choose men that were inherently not great, or, you know, I've been in a few abusive relationships or just not great or toxic, it's run that range. I was doing that so that I was always the good one. I was always perfect. I was always the angel because in comparison to this monster, you know, I'm perfect. And I realized I was doing that unconsciously but I only have myself to blame. If you are picking the wrong person or the wrong relationship after as a pattern, you're the common denominator. You are actually the problem. And that was definitely the case for me.
So if you guys are nodding your heads already because you're identifying with a lot of what you're hearing Heather say, there's usually a reason for this, right? Like we don't just pop out of the womb and are these people. A lot of this is learned behavior based on our background, the environment, what happened to us and around us during our formative years. So Heather, give us some background here on how you think you became this person who was just used to dysfunction and unhealthy behaviors and unhealthy relationships.
Yeah. And I think I'm probably an extreme example, but I don't think that means it's not relatable to maybe a lesser degree for most people. You know, for me, I grew up in fundamentalist evangelicalism in a quiverful house. And I just threw out a bunch of terms that probably most people don't know what any of that means.
I just thought, I'm like, what?
In a, what's my, it's all like, culture, equivocal? Say that.
Yeah. So you're going to have to Google some of this, but
I am.
But what that means is essentially Orthodox Christianity. And there's a certain sect of it called being quiverful, which, you know, fundamentalist Christianity doesn't believe in birth control anyway, because they have the wrong idea that a lot of like hormonal birth control actually can abort a fetus at a certain point, which is actually not true. But that rumor is widely spread. And of course, that's not allowed in fundamentalist Christianity at all. And so what that means is certain sects are quiverful. So that means God determines your family size. Science says that means you're going to have a whole lot of siblings, and I have 21 siblings. So, and I'm an eldest daughter. So there was a lot. Yeah. So there are a lot of us in that, and we grew up in fundamentalist Christianity, very isolated. We were homeschooled.
Okay. I'm so sorry. I have to stop you mid-sentence. My mind is blown. I don't say this word a lot, but what the fuck is going on here? What? And then in the middle of this, you know, stuff, which I wanted to yell, Jesus Christ, my microphone went out, my entire recording device went out, and Andrea says that God just struck me dead. So I'm sorry. What, Heather? Can you keep going, please? I might be dead over here.
Jesus literally took the wheel of this podcast. He's like, I've got two Gentiles and a Jew. They're all about to rip my shit apart. Done.
You're out.
These three people should have had birth control. Stop. All right. Keep going, Heather. Good Lord.
All right. Okay. So, yeah, I have 21 siblings. And it's kind of funny. The older I get, the more overwhelmed I am by the fact of my childhood. Because I think when I know this sounds ridiculous because it is, but when I was young, I didn't really think about it much. Because we were surrounded by other large families. You know, my best friend was from a family of 24 kids. So, you know, to us, it was like, I didn't know. I didn't know what it was until I was an adult.
Yeah.
And so growing, and we were very isolated. We were homeschooled for most of the time of our childhood. You know, we didn't know. We were so sheltered. Our family vehicle was a shuttle bus.
What part of the country did you grow up in, Heather? What part of the country were you in?
Texas. Actually, my coffee mug today says it's Texas. Yeah, 30 minutes south of Dallas in a real small town.
But, I'm from Texas, too. Did we ever talk about this?
I don't think we did. You know, I think I saw you mention it once, and I meant to say something to you about it, and I didn't. Yeah, I'm from Texas.
Okay.
All the way till I was 18.
Oh, same. How different, such a big state, very lots of different people. Okay.
Yes.
Okay, shuttle bus. I'm still with you. I don't think Morgan
We're back
is.
On the bus. I'm trying to get on the bus right now.
We are now back on the bus. And so growing up in that culture, it's very patriarchal. You know, I grew up, you know, all the things you hear about it are true. They're true. You know, I went to parochial school for my church where we went for high school, and they would pull all the girls out into the highway, measure their skirts. We were taught abstinence. And so that doesn't work, as we all know. And inevitably, the girls who got pregnant would just disappear. I still don't know what happened to some of them.
Oh,
it was just very patriarchal. The church that I went in, and you may have heard of this, I'm not sure. It made national news, but I don't know if it made national news outside of like religious peeps. But one of our elders was a man named Robert Morris, and he used to get up in front of the church every day and talk about how he used to be unfaithful to his wife and God healed him and he's never made that mistake again. It came out that The other woman was a 12-year-old girl. And he's just recently been charged officially with all. It was a huge deal. And that happened at my church. And that just gives you an example of the attitude. And growing up in there, it's when you become an adult and you meet people who they look, I mean, they look at you like, where the fuck did you come from? And now I look at myself that way, but it just, you put, sends you on a very long journey to figure out and unwind the way you grew up and how basically everything you were taught was wrong. You know, purity culture, I have such big feelings about that. And all of this plays into relationships. All of this plays into who you choose to marry. All of this plays into what your adult life looks like.
Because of how you view yourself.
Right. It's my fault. You know, I told the story on a different podcast. And I've just started talking about it publicly, but I was assaulted in my early 20s. And I really blame purity culture for that because I didn't even know it was an assault because I genuinely thought it was my fault until I was like 35. And I was actually watching the Me Too thing that happened. There were some women telling their stories. And I was like, oh my God, that's what that was. And I didn't even know. I didn't even know. So you can imagine all the ways that plays into how you choose a marriage partner, how you choose relationships, and getting divorced, even though it was definitely the hardest, most difficult part of my life, it also is where I woke up. And I think if it wouldn't have happened, I wouldn't be able to be in a healthy relationship with myself or with anybody else or to have a good and happy life.
Okay, so this has been really boring. Wow. Andrea, thanks for bringing such a boring guest on this time. So could you just tell us about your marriage? I'm sure that was all roses, considering where you came from.
Yeah. And I'm careful talking about it because I want to keep it to my story. We have kids together. But I, you know, keeping it to myself, I chose someone that it didn't end up. It wasn't the right fit. It was not the right fit. You know, we had a lot of arguments. We fought a lot. It just was not, and we were not happy. And it got to a certain point where we just, you know, I always tell someone when someone asks, how do you know it's time to get divorced? And I say, when you lose hope that it could ever get better. Like at that point, you know, marriage is serious and you should fight for it and all those things. Yes. But that's what you're supposed to say. But at a certain point, once you lose hope that it's never, that it's ever going to get better, it's time to get out. You know, I got to the point where I was suicidal. It was so bad. And at that point, I wanted my kids to have a mom, so we pulled out. I would say in terms of my marriage, it just was very chaotic. There was a lot of arguing. We were both so unhappy. I think I was definitely the one that was ready to pull the trigger on a divorce before he was. But he wasn't happy either. And, you know, I think it's just like comes down to personalities. There are people that when things are not working, you get out or you fix it or you change it. And then there are other people that just stay in it. For reasons that I don't understand, that's not in my DNA to do that. If something's not working, I want to fix it or change it or move.
The person whom you married, was he a part of this church? And when did you leave this church? Okay, so he was not a part of the church. So you had already, you've left this lifestyle. And then I'm assuming that you leave and then you think, okay, I left, I'm better.
Yeah. Right?
You're like, I'm healed. I'm no longer a part of this organization. I'm not a part of all this blah, blah, blah. And then you go and you enter a marriage, not realizing that there's all these things about yourself that you believe and how life should look. And then you get into a marriage that was not a good fit for you. Is that correct?
Yeah. And I would say probably the biggest thing that I was, that my journey to getting better, to getting healthy, because I needed to be pushed. Because I think when you live in like kind of like a world of delusion, you don't get that where you're at is unhealthy. And I remember this is where it started. My brother killed himself.
Oh,
and it's in therapy talking about, because exactly to your point, I was like, I'm healed. I've been doing the work. I've been going to therapy. Like I'm doing all the things a good girl should do.
Yeah.
And I was so wrong about that. But I remember I was sitting there in therapy and I was talking to her about my brother dying. And she just looked at me and she said, are you sad about this? Because you sound like you're reciting the news. And I was like, yes, of course I'm sad.
Uh-huh.
And that's when I started to realize I didn't have any emotion. Like, I don't think I was capable of feeling love for someone. Like, I had the actions of love unlocked. Like, I know what it means to act, you know, like what loving actions look like. But I couldn't feel it. I didn't have any emotions because I think when you grow up that way, the way to survive is you kill those emotions.
So you don't think that it was a trauma response?
No, I don't think so. I think it was literally the things that get you through traumatic experiences and traumatic childhoods, they don't work when you're grown up if you want to be healthy.
Yeah.
And that was really, and I didn't see it. I didn't realize until that therapist brought it up to me. And it took me a long time to get those emotions back. But that's how it played into my marriage. Like I don't think I was capable of loving any, to be honest.
You know, it's so funny because I had a moment very similar to that with comedy where I was in therapy and one therapist said to me, she's like, you know, this isn't funny, right? And I'm like, well, right, but I'm like a comedian. La, 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 la. And she's like, right, but what you're talking about is not funny. And at some point, we have to stop making everything funny in order for you to actually get better. And we all have our things. And Morgan, I'm sure you have seen this walk through your office, right? With people who have different coping mechanisms that they think are these like healthy strategies. But I'm assuming that a divorce attorney usually sees right through them.
I do. I see right through them. And I kind of see exactly like you are talking about, Heather. So I have had, you know, recently a client that is this client will come in and say, I am so upset about something. But the way that she will convey it is, I am so upset about this. And I'm like, what? And so, you know, I understand it's a trauma response. And I understand that she has gone through a ton of things. But it's really difficult when we are fighting something and we need her to say how upset she is and it falls flat. So that's somewhere where they're not, that person truly needs more therapy, more work on themselves. And it's hard. It makes, as a divorce lawyer, it makes you a little nervous about, okay, is this person capable of decisions at this point in her life that are good for her? And this goes both ways. I'm just talking about a client that's a female. I have lots of male clients. So there's all of these issues that we see. And Heather, you know, I want to talk to you about the divorce process in general. I mean, you went through so much before, and I'm sure some of our listeners are saying, well, God, I thought I had it bad, but good God, Heather and your cult, you had it really bad, right? There's hope for me. But, you know, we're a divorce podcast that's all about making the mistakes of the divorce better. And hopefully our people will not, that are listeners, that will not step into that. What mistakes were you making in your divorce process?
You know, I made some serious mistakes, and then I made some that I just look back and I'm like, wow, those are the actions of a desperate woman. Because first of all, queen of bad choices, I decided to initiate the divorce process in the middle of COVID, before there was a vaccine, which I really do not recommend. Spring of 2020, I was like, I need a divorce.
Okay, not a good choice.
No, that did not go well. You know, I think some of the other like mistakes I made, I should have interviewed more lawyers. I just went with, I was so like at that point, you know, we just talked about how I don't have emotions, but like, or I do now, but not at that time. But I was desperate. I was desperate. I just interviewed one lawyer. I wish I would have interviewed multiple lawyers and really just taken a step back. And I know it's so hard because you are literally at rock bottom. And so it's I think it's very challenging for people who are initiating the divorce process most of the time to make good choices.
And Heather, you're so right, because what Andrea and I always preach on this podcast is if you can, depending on where you are, because we all know some people are in very small towns where there's not a lot, but if you are in a town where there are many divorce lawyers, interview three. You are going to see a complete difference between the three in strategy, in their demeanor, in how you feel when you walk out. You will make the best choice when you've interviewed a few.
Yeah, I completely agree.
What other mistakes, if any, did you make?
Well, the number one mistake I made. So in my situation, I was the higher earner. And I just, you know, most people, they have not gotten divorced before. This is their first time. And I certainly didn't know what to do. I had no expertise and I didn't really know anyone who was divorced. And it was the pandemic. So who am I going to talk to get advice about it? Like, it would have been great if y'all existed at this time. I could have used it. But I should have filed for temporary support. And I say this to all my friends who have gotten divorced and who are perhaps the higher earner. You need to file for temporary support. We kept our finances commingled. He stayed in the house. I moved into my divorce apartment. Everything stayed commingled for a total of 2 years. And in that situation, you're not managing all the money. You're just managing their part. They're doing whatever they want with their side. And so at the end, I had a $20,000 credit card bill that we got paid off. But I should have done temporary support. I think that can also elongate the divorce process. Because if things are like, no, certain people are not motivated to end it and get to the end. I was motivated because I want to get to the part where we have alimony and child support and everything structured. But I could have done that if I would have filed for temporary support ahead of time to get us through the divorce process.
I think that's an interesting point you make, Heather. And it's all, I would say it's case by case from a divorce lawyer's perspective. There are reasons why you want to go forward on a temporary support hearing and ask for that. And there's reasons you don't. For you, you made one comment that I completely agree with you. If it's somebody who's like, you know, I need to get divorced yesterday and you want to push this divorce and you have someone on the other side that's really not willing to do much, doesn't really care if you get divorced, kind of likes where they're at, just kind of floating. Temporary support and asking for it might be the lever that you need to pull. So I hear that.
Yeah. And it's really frustrating because I think divorce really pushes your ideas and beliefs around morality and ethics. Mm-hmm. I know I was certainly challenged because I wanted to go in with good faith. You know, the offers that we made through the agreement process were very 50-50. You know, what I thought was pretty equitable by the book, by the law. But when you have one person who wants to get divorced as fast as possible and the other one is not motivated, that doesn't work. And you do actually need to have certain levers, like the money train's going to stop at a certain point, or we're going to make this official at a certain point. And, you know, and I know for me, I wanted to believe I could go in with my best intent and best beliefs and that it would all end up being okay. But divorce, unfortunately, is messy and it really pushes you in that area.
This is what I want to say. I think that, like, Heather, you and I do not get divorced professionally, right? We're human beings and you and I are both people who came from some very challenging backgrounds. And so it sort of shapes how we see people and how we want to see people. And you also have your babies involved and you don't think that you're going to go into this thing with boxing gloves on and like, and fight this person. Look, backing up, one of the first thing that you said was, I hired the first person I spoke to, right? Have you done what we guide people to do in our divorce crash course, and you speak to three people and you follow the questions that we give people and you map all of this out? You could have picked somebody who would have known how to guide you on that trail, because they would have been the ones to say, file for temporary support or don't, and here's what we do instead, right? Because you don't know. And naturally, you're always going to have those moments where you're like, this doesn't feel right. I don't like what I have to do right now. And that's why you rely on that person who says, I hear you. I know you're not born a chess player. This is unfortunately what we're going to do. And this is going to be a temporary ick, but you're going to have a big payoff and I'm going to help you get through it, right? But for people like us, we don't know. It just feels weird and wrong. And so we kind of give in to those like feelings, right? Of, I don't like the way I feel right now. I remember doing the same thing. I remember having people tell me, Andrea, why are you just letting this person take everything? When are you going to fight back? And I would say, I'm not a fighter. I don't like the way that makes me feel. Dumb bitch. I should have fought.
Yeah. And it makes me laugh so much in a not funny at all way that usually when you're getting divorced, you are in just the worst emotional and mental health of a long time. And you're sitting there having to make these really important decisions. And it is so hard to make quality decisions in that state. But you've got to find a way to do it because it has such a huge impact on the rest of your life. And I recognize how hard it is, but you have to find a way. And I know if I would have followed that advice and interviewed at least three lawyers, because what I didn't stop to do is remind myself, you've never done this before. You're a smart person, but you've never done this before. You need to teach yourself how to do it. And part of that is interviewing and seeing different flavors, seeing how different people handle it. Because I really did need someone to tell me what to do, what they have seen. You know, Morgan, you see so many divorces. You really know what it looks like. I don't know. I don't know the inner workings. And if she would have said, in your situation, this is going to drag out unless you have some levers that incentivize getting this to the final day as soon as possible, I think the divorce process would have been a lot easier for me. We would have landed in the same place, but maybe it would have been faster and less taxing to get there.
What was the hardest part emotionally for you?
I felt really guilty because I was the one that left, you know, and I was the one that wanted to divorce. I was the one that left the house. And for a long time, I felt really guilty. And it's taken me a long time to want to say back to that person who was like on the floor, you did the right thing. Actually, It is okay to choose a healthier life. Like, just because you made a really big mistake, doesn't mean you have to live in it. You know, probably, Andrea, it sounds like you and we had some similar difficult things in our background. Mm-hmm. And there's the idea of you made your bed, now you're going to lie in it.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? You don't have to do that. You get one life. The idea that you have one life is real. I mean, maybe there's more later on. Who knows? But as far as I know, I only get one life. And are you really going to do this in this terrible situation? And even though I felt so guilty with my little baby kids and all of that, I wish I could say to that person, this is so hard, but that doesn't mean you're not doing the right thing.
Did you have an on-the-floor moment? Because I had several. Like, did you have
one? Yeah.
Can you remember, like, one specifically where it was, I mean, because I just go back to these moments that I had of being on the floor of the bathroom in the apartment that I was living in and just primal screaming. That was, I think, like knowing that I was being so like mentally fucked with and I couldn't make it stop. And that I thought that by leaving, I was stopping the abuse. And it was that realization that like, no, you don't have any control over what they're going to do. You only get to control like how you respond. And I was so tired. And it was a moment where I didn't have my kids. They were with, you know, their dad. And I was so scared and just felt completely hopeless. And I mean, it was that feeling of I left thinking that things would be so much better instantly. And now I'm thinking, I don't know that I can live like this.
Yeah, I had a very similar moment. I had a lot of them, but there's one that stands out to me. I thought me leaving was rock bottom. And it was all up from here. And I think mm-hmm. that was just the beginning of rock bottom. Choosing yes. to leave was the beginning of the walk through the forest. I'm a storyteller, if you can't tell, so I talk in like metaphors and all of that. But, you know, the 2 year, you know, and I feel lucky, my divorce took 2 years. And at first, and initially I was like, oh, that's forever. And I have friends now, they're like 5 years in. So I don't stop saying that. But I remember I thought it was going to stop. You know, the day I left, mm-hmm. I was like, well, I'm not there anymore, so it's going to stop. And I remember one day, it was a full day of just getting barraged. And some of the things that were being said, I literally could not believe another human being would say that to anyone, begging it to stop. And I remember just sitting on my bed, and I didn't have my kids either. And there was no vaccine. So I was at my house, and the only humans I saw were my little kids who weren't even with me that day. Mm-hmm. And I remember just sitting there being like, wow, is this ever going to get better? And I remember I went to bed. You know, when you're really depressed and you sleep all the time? I had that moment where I was like, I need to check out and I don't want to do anything bad to myself. So I'm going to go sleep. I'm going to find a way to go to sleep and just lay here in my bed. And that was, I think, the worst moment of the whole process.
One thing you said that is so important for people to know if you're thinking about leaving your marriage is that leaving is a really huge step, but it does get worse from there before it gets better. That is the trajectory of a divorce. And so you have to know it, you have to prep for it, and you have to be okay that some days will be what Heather's describing, what Andrea's describing. Hopefully you're not laying on your bathroom floor or on your bed, you know, in a funk, but you might. And it does get better if you're there. I just want our listeners to know that. It gets a little rockier after you leave or you file for divorce, and then it starts to go up from there. Andrea, what do you think?
Well, guess what? I'm not still on that bathroom floor. Eventually, you get up. You don't become part of the floor. Heather might have fallen asleep so that she wouldn't do something really stupid, but she woke up now. You do get up. You do move your way through it. And this is why we do so many episodes on what do you fucking do with yourself when you are in that place. And I encourage you guys to go listen to those episodes because they are packed with action steps on what specifically do you do? How do I move myself through this place of I don't think I can do this? Because I promise you, you can, but you have to align yourself with the right divorce team to get you through this process. And even though you just heard Morgan say that it's going to get harder before it gets worse, I mean, better. Harder. It'll get harder before.
I hope that does not.
And then it'll get worse again, and then eventually get better. Then it gets really bad. So, wait for that part. No. Listen, your marriage, if your marriage is in that spot where you know that it's not going to get better, trust that knowing, because you have to leave. You cannot hold out hope, even though every single part of your body is screaming at you that you deserve more, that your kids deserve more. Don't kid yourself and stay in something because you're so scared of, you know, the divorce being icky. It's a temporary ick. Staying in a bad marriage is a forever ick. So think about that. Something that I think is really interesting, and, you know, Morgan does this for a living. Morgan, the clientele whom Morgan gets to work with are some very accomplished, successful, probably not dumb individuals. Heather, you're no dummy. I mean, you made some mistakes in your divorce, but you're a very successful, accomplished, intelligent woman. And I think I just want to normalize for a minute that even really smart people are going to make mistakes in a divorce process. This is not the kind of thing where you can think like, oh, well, sure, stupid people make those mistakes, but I'm not going to do that. So number one, know that. But number two, and much more interesting, Heather, let's talk about your professional life for a minute, because you've done some things that a lot of us haven't done.
I have had a really unusual career, I think. Maybe. I don't know. It's kind of like when I try to explain it, I've had more than a couple people say, they people pay you to do that?
Yeah,
actually. So I have a theater degree. So I come from storytelling. You know, everything in my life is storytelling, whether personal or brand. And it sounds like such a silly title, but I am good at it and I do get paid for it. So I work for brands. I started out as an Oprah producer and I had a dream job, Oprah's Book Club, which that is like the dream job I did not even hope to get. And I got it. And then I worked on and it's kind of funny, this was near the end of my marriage. I was a producer on the Oprah show, but there was a show called Super Soul Sunday, which some people may or may not have heard of it. It's all about personal growth and spirituality. And to be honest, that I think that job taught me more than anything that I brought to the table. You know, and then I moved into, I lead creative strategy in big tech for small businesses. Now, what I do on the side that actually I don't get paid for, but I'm really passionate about it. I'm a moth storyteller, which for anyone who needs an outlet to tell your personal stories, I encourage you to go to a moth open mic. You learn so much and it's a good place to kind of talk about what's going on with you in a safe environment. And then I run a media company called McG Media and we do podcasts. I have a whole podcast that is now closed all about divorce, mainly about dating after divorce, dumpster diving, the way that that goes right after divorce, and then slowly moving into healthy relationships. And then something called The Happily Never After, which talks about how life's endings can lead to a new beginning. And that's a whole content project that I'm really passionate about and has become kind of a work of art. We talk to so many people.
So accomplished. We're really impressed by you. And we want to mention something to you. I don't know if you know this about myself and Andrea, but we had a really special guest on called Bill Doherty. He was the founder or is the founder of Discernment Counseling, which is an awesome type of counseling that most people don't know about. And he was on Oprah's show and he told us that we are better interviewers than Oprah. So what do you think about that?
I think that is an amazing compliment. I think that is one of the best compliments that anybody could get. So I think
it's great. I'm so shocked that the lights didn't flicker right now or that our mics didn't go out, because the only person stronger than God is Oprah. And she, I was so nervous. I'm like, wait, what's going to happen? Yes, when I believe he's a doctor, right? Dr. Bill Doherty. He's going to be a doctor right now. I remember when he said that to us, we were like, wait. This is the coolest soundbite we can ever use. And then I realized, wait, do we really want a soundbite out there where we're saying that we're better than Oprah? Like, that's the dumbest thing. Like, who's better than Oprah? Nobody, except us in our minds for that one moment. But I love how you breezed over that. Heather, you're like, yeah, I did a bunch of few things. Like, I produced Oprah. And let me think, what else? Like, come on. You want to be the sounder on the Oprah show?
Well, it sounds so funny. I think for me, like, they're just, you know, I put this out there to anyone who's going through a divorce. I think the things that get you through are, try to remember, what's that thing that makes you happy? Because you need breaks. You cannot go through a multi-year divorce process being on the bathroom floor the whole time. You have to give yourself breaks. finding things that make you happy. And for me, you know, I started my divorce podcast in the middle of divorce. So it's kind of funny. If you listen to Thirsty, the podcast, all the way through, at the beginning, we sound like total disasters. And by the end, we're kind of okay. And so it's kind of interesting to track that process. But, you know, I just always say to people, like, find something that makes you happy. And you need to do like little glimmers of that when you're in the depths of the divorce process. Otherwise, you are going to go nuts.
Did Oprah herself ever teach you anything? Like, do you have any moments with Oprah where you're like, I will always remember this?
I remember, I think the biggest lesson she taught me, first of all, you know, like when anyone talks shit about Oprah, I get personally offended because she was a great boss. Like, she is exactly who she is in any space.
Yeah.
And I think the biggest lesson she taught me is that she really put on all of us as producers the value of intention. So any story we tell, any content we put together, anything that we're doing in the work environment, what is your intention? What are you trying to achieve? That's where you go. And so she was just so good at like rallying, you know, a group of 70 producers, getting us all together on the same page around the idea of intention. Mm-hmm. And I think to me, that was probably the lesson that I've carried into everything in my life. What's my intention?
Which is so important. Yeah, because you're not just throwing spaghetti up against a wall and you're not just doing something in a vacuum. Like, there's a reason for this story that you're telling. And it's so funny because that's something that we always make sure that we do, is making sure that there is a point. Are we helping somebody with this? And I think that's something that everybody knows about Oprah, because it was never just salacious for the point of being salacious, right? Like, there was always a lesson to be learned. And I'm going to tell you, I have an Oprah story that I actually talk about on this show, like from time to time. There was an episode that was about a woman who survived her husband who murdered his entire family. She had gone to work, or she had left the house, and she comes home and everybody has been killed by the husband. And they were talking about, how do you get through this? Like, how do you get better? How do you heal from something that is so unimaginably tragic? And she's like, well, I didn't think that I needed help until somebody said to me, when you wash dishes at night, do you wash dishes completely on your own? And most people would say, well, yeah, nobody stands there and helps me. And she said, wrong. You use dish soap. You use a sponge. If you have crusted meatloaf on a pan, maybe you even put on gloves to protect your nails. You have tools that you have to use to help you get the job done. She's like, you cannot just get better on your own. You have to, for a lot of people, take the medicine, go to the therapy, do the things. And that one clip from the Oprah show has stayed with me. I was probably a child when I saw this. This has stayed with me my entire life. So, and talk about intention, you know, it's like, it could have just been a story about this horrible thing that happened to this woman.
Well, and Andrea, I've never heard that story before, but I like it. And it does kind of stick with you. And for our listeners, what I want to do is I want to quickly recap the takeaways and the action steps. But before we do, please, Heather, give us like a soundbite, a blip. Tell us quickly about Happily Never After.
So the Happily Never After is a project that I started after my dad died last year. And I was there at his deathbed. My dad was a terrible person. You know, and I made it to his deathbed. I forgave him in person. I said goodbye. And the months afterward have been very different than I expected after losing a parent. And it sent me on this big journey, this spiritual journey, to be woo-woo about it. And it just got me thinking about how life's endings, like divorce, like death, there are so many endings in life, and it can lead to a better beginning. You know, I think, like what I say about divorce, it's so hard, but it's what enabled me to have the life I have today. And so it's a podcast where I bring on different guests who have experienced big endings in their life and what it's led to. Recently, we had an episode that has really stuck with me, a woman named Alex George, who at 21 was diagnosed with Ewing sarcoma and spent a year in the hospital going through chemo and just this horrible, horrible experience. And she is the happiest, most joyful person today. Mm-hmm. It's what you were saying. Like, we're talking about being on the bathroom floor, but today we're happy. Like, you made it. You made it. And so that's really what the podcast series is about. we look at endings and give people hope that there can be a next new chapter. So it's been really fun, and I've learned a lot from, and we talk about serious subjects, but we laugh a lot too.
I love that. I think that that's amazing. Okay, Morgan, let's get to these takeaways and action items. You ready?
Yes, let's do it. Okay, so I'm going to start with the first one. The takeaway that I have from this episode is, number one, even really accomplished people, and I see it, they can easily make mistakes in their divorce. Don't kid yourself by thinking, oh, I'm too smart to fall for that manipulation tactic, or I can do this without any tools in my toolbox. You just can't. You cannot make good decisions when you're completely overwhelmed without the tools. That's number one.
Mm-hmm. Number two, Heather's biggest mistake was, in my opinion, is she hired the first divorce attorney that she interviewed. Had, you know, she said that her biggest mistake was the temporary spousal support. But I think that it's, had she hired the right attorney to guide her through this process, she would have made the best decision for her case. So guys, we talk about this on every single episode. Everything goes back to who your attorney is. So yes, you need an attorney. You may cannot DIY this thing. Do not go on Pinterest and type in how do I get divorced and do shiplap at the same time. You have to interview 3 different attorneys. Use the divorce crash course. Ask them the right questions. It matters. Number 3 is, you're going to get off the bathroom floor, okay? Number 3 is a takeaway. You're going to get through this. You might not know how you're going to get through this, but I promise you that you will. And in order to get through it, you have to have the right team around you. So I'm going to encourage you to go back and listen to the episode we recorded a few weeks ago on who should be in your divorce team. And make sure that you have aligned yourself with the right people to help you get off the bathroom floor. Anything else you want to add to that, Morgan?
I think the last thing, it kind of dovetails into what you just said, which is, know it's going to get harder before it gets better. Yeah. So when you take that first step, if you know it's going to get harder before it gets better, you will get through it much, much easier. With that, Heather, thank you for joining us today. It was eye-opening. I'm still not off the bus. I might be stuck on the bus for a while, but regardless, very interesting podcast today. So thank you.
Thank you all so much for having me in.
How's that for a conversation, Miss Morgan?
I have to tell you, I was not expecting that. It made me feel better about my boring week because that revved me right up.
I think the funniest part for me is like when she said that she was the oldest of 21 siblings and all of a sudden your mic goes out.
Literally.
So funny, from my end, I see, yeah, you know, and I actually had 21 siblings and I see Morgan Stock still has left the studio. Like, go away. Like,
there was like a complete implosion and I was like stressed and like sweating and couldn't get my like anything to work. And I just wanted to say so much. And I couldn't even get back into the recording or the video to see what else she was saying because I was fumbling so bad.
And I think what another lesson here is that maybe you didn't have the upbringing that Heather had, and likely you didn't, but likely you had something that shaped who you are and that got you to this place of getting into this marriage that you're now needing to get out of. Or maybe you're not the one who's initiating a divorce, but maybe you still are evolving. Because guess what? Morgan opened the show saying, you know, I thought I was at the point where I was going to be done learning. I'm like, no, we're never done learning. We're constantly going to have things that are thrown our way that are going to force us to evolve. And I'm pretty sure that that's a good thing. I'm pretty sure that Oprah would think that that's a good thing. So guys, as you're evolving, lean on us. That's what we're here for. We're going to help you become the most beautiful, powerful little butterfly that you could ever be. But you have to make sure that you don't fuck this up. So don't make the mistakes that Heather made. Don't make the mistakes that I made.
Yeah. And remember, Andrea and I always say this, but it's so true. And you probably can't even think this far ahead, but your life will look so
different from now to 5 years from now? 5 years generally is what I say to my clients from the day you start your divorce process. 5 years after, you are going to be living a beautiful version of your life that you've probably never seen before. So stick it out. It gets a little rocky before it gets better, but it will get better. You'll get off that floor. Listen, if you like our podcast, please enable us to bring on these fabulous guests that we can, you know, continue to get, because we're so excited about these wonderful guests. So how do you do it? You need to rate and review our show. Leave us a 5-star, make up a name, call yourself Brenda from Boston or Chad from Florida, whatever. Give us a 5-star review. We get the best guests that way.
Yes, absolutely. And remember, divorce is a marathon and is not a sprint. It's not going to be over in 5 minutes, but we are going to help you get through this. Listen to these episodes. Go back and listen to older episodes. Join the private community. Follow us on social media. Follow us on TikTok. TikTok has a whole different group of content. So if you're not going on TikTok yet, go follow us at Divorce Crash Course on TikTok. You will love it over there. And remember, above all, you guys can do this. You will do this because you've got this.
And we, my friends, have got you.